Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, we have a little personal business to get out of the way before we get into our show, our topics. And it concerns Ron's texting style. So let me Piper, see if I can describe for the audience Ron's texting style. So imagine looking at your phone and getting a text that says, "Boys." And then that's it for 7 or 8 minutes. All right. So you get the text that says, "Boys," indicating that it's time to pay attention. Like it's time to have a conversation. And then Ron is radio silent for 7 or 8 minutes. And then the rest of the content of the text comes later. I don't want to say this is aggravating because I feel like we bullied, you know, Ronald, poor wafy Ron, you know, kind of got tossed about by the wind, you know, as so happens when you weigh 39 pounds, but he also got tossed about by our
39 pounds and dropping.
39 dropping. Yeah. Yeah. So when
I'd be such a happier man right now if I was really 39 pounds.
Yeah. When your body's just kind of vulturing itself.
Hollow is happy.
Be able to justify some more duck donuts today if I was really 39, boys.
I don't want to say that's super aggravating, Piper, but it is different. And being that Ron is a 4 and needs to do everything differently, I'm guessing that's the reason for it. But Big R, you have the floor, and I want you to kind of explain your texting style to us.
Yeah, so this is what it is, boys. So in sort of this age of we are just getting constantly blasted by information – What I didn't like was years ago, I would text a person, I would give them all the information and then never hear back. So okay. I just said, you know what? I want to get their attention because I just don't want to text until I have their attention. So I always do a heading like "dude" or "hey" or "boys" or something. And then when they text back and they go, "yeah," then it's like, okay, good. Now we can dialogue.
Interesting.
Has anybody communicated to you that it's really annoying to have to come back and go, "yeah"?
Until this point, not very many people. No.
See, I don't. I need to clarify something. This is good. I'm glad we're having this talk, baby. I don't often do the "yeah," because I just assume that when you say "baby" or "boys," you're just going to launch into the thing. I didn't know it was incumbent on us as the audience to say "yeah," but I'll start doing that now.
Well, no. It's totally up to you. To me, it's just a way to say "hey." It's usually something that we need to suss out in the moment, right? So it's like something I want you guys to, I want to know that I have your attention so that I can text this thing and we can just get to it. It's actually a way just to be efficient so that I'm not just texting and then waiting 10 hours to get your response on something. Let's just get it now. We'll get it out of the way. That's all it is.
So do we not have the prerogative to take 10 hours to respond to a text? Is the understanding that a text message has like a there's like an appropriate, you know, within X number of minutes or you're being rude?
No, this is what I'm saying. When I say "boys" and then I pause at some point, I know it's going to bother you because you think that I have something important to say. So eventually you can wait 10 hours, but like, I'm not going to be worried about it because I just threw out the "boys." And then so I'm not going to be worried about the information until I know I have you and you're curious and you actually want to hear what I have to say.
See, this is the irresistible force and immovable object because I'm really good at not responding to texts.
Interesting.
I do it all the time to people because they texted me on my time and so I'll respond to it or not as I feel like it. I don't feel any obligation to respond immediately. So I feel like we might come to an impasse on this at some point.
No, we really won't. At just some point I'll say "boys," nobody responds, and then when I have to, I'll eventually lay out the info. No. And it's not that technical, you know.
Answer me this though. Like,
it's just a method.
Do you ever run up against a scenario in which you've thrown like "dude" and "baby" and "boys" and all that out to so many people that you've forgotten, like, that you dropped, like, a "dude" to somebody, like, 6 texts ago, and you're like, "oh, I left that guy hanging for, like, a day and a half."
No, because No, it never happens because what I do is I always just throw it out there. I never wait that long. So I throw it out there to see if I have their attention. But then if it's been like 10 minutes, I'll just eventually type out the thing because you're right. Like I would start forgetting all this stuff.
Piper, I'm tickled by this. Why is this so funny to me?
Because Ron's way overthinking how text messages work, which is shoot somebody a question and they respond when they can.
I've never, ever had this conversation with anybody until right now. So it's actually the opposite. I have not overthunk any of it. I've never even thought about my method until you guys just brought it up.
Now, Piper, vis-a-vis last week's episode, just to kind of build on that, does this new information, does this scenario, does this place Ron even more as like a hyper millennial, or does it place him even more as like a hopeless old man? Like, which category does this put him in? Hopeless old man or hyper millennial?
I believe this, it just proves how enigmatic he is, because I know nobody else who texts like this. I'm sure some listener will hit us up.
That's
on
what he wants. You're speaking Ron's
yes,
language.
Yes, I know.
Right now.
He
thrills him
to
no end.
I can hear him glowing.
My texting is
this.
Different. I've done it. I'm unique.
I'm the most unique texter of
no
all
one's
time,
like
boys.
Me.
Nobody texts like Big R.
No one texts like me, and no one's as skinny as me.
Oh, that's no not one. True.
Yeah.
No, so well, it's clearly not millennial, because a millennial will just – they'll just blow up your phone and they'll throw in all sorts of emojis and abbreviations and who knows what else. And like it just – and then they'll probably use other things besides, you know, standard texting as well, various other direct messaging and on all the platforms.
I'm a minimalist. When are you guys going to get down to the fact that you're dealing with a minimalist, not a millennialist? So that's the difference, man. That's the qualifier.
Millennialist, that sounds like something, you know, John MacArthur would pick a fight with you about.
Oh, maybe my gosh. Are we going to get into Johnny Mac right now? Are we going to get into the scandal? Is that where you guys want to go with this? I mean, is that –
what
is that
scandal?
What this is transitioning?
Is he in a scandal?
He's
ever seen a scandal.
Not – I mean, typical of Johnny Mac, it's not a moral scandal, but he's aggressively berating people who believe things differently than him. So
it's just like a being mean scandal. That's like – like a level 2 Christian scandal. You know,
baby,
I mean?
It's not.
It's
not
also
a scandal.
The exact
it's
same
John
thing
MacArthur
he's been doing. It's John MacArthur being awake. It's the same
it's,
thing
yeah,
he's
John
done
MacArthur
since 1982.
Morning, being John
it's MacArthur doing MacArthur things. Absolutely.
It's like Ted Cluck waiting up and like boxing. It's like it's what is.
And yeah, Ronnie and, waking up and not eating.
And not eating and not having breakfast.
It's me waking up and texting boys.
Yeah, and then waiting a half a day. Absolutely.
Me waking up and having eggs and avocado toast.
Baby, I want to get back into this John MacArthur thing because I feel like it dovetails nicely into one of our topics. But before I do that, I have this is something I was half serious about, Piper. I think Ron, you know, he's kind of beating his brains out trying to get another book deal, and it hasn't really popped for him. But
thanks, baby.
Yeah, no problem, baby.
Thanks for painting me in that great light. I don't know.
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
That
thanks for peeling back the curtain a little too far.
Yeah, appreciate
but,
yeah. Because as a millennial, I don't let that many details about my life and promotional life get out there. So,
dude, right? As a millennial, you're
you just blow up everything. There's
image.
No cool. There's yeah. no yeah. You just
absolutely.
Let it,
right. Yeah. I think you should. I think you need to write like a quasi business. Like leadership book for pastors.
Oh my gosh.
I think you need to be this guy.
Wrongest guy in the world.
Dude, you could have a chapter about communication. So like the text thing could go in there. And honestly, I think you need to be, we lack this in the reform space. Okay. We lack like the pastor who says, hey, it's okay to like rest and have a retreat. Like you need to be that guy. But like, that's a niche you could fill, is being the guy that says, hey, you know what? Treat yourself. You know, do we have this guy, Piper?
Like, yeah, I think his name's John Acuff, isn't it?
No, well, he's you know.
Reformed. So the you guy, the treat yourself reformed guy.
The treat yourself reformed guy. I'm talking about a real pastor.
No, I'm picturing all reformed pastors trying to say that sentence and not immediately like begin to beat themselves with a whip to self-flagellate. Just
we got tons of like beat yourself with a whip guys for sure. We do a brisk business in that.
Yeah, we do a brisk business in all the things that Martin Luther tried to leave behind when he became reformed. Ironically.
Oh yeah, like yeah, absolutely. Wow. I don't know. Think about it, baby. I think there could be a future in this. You know?
I don't know. I can't get a book deal. That's you just laid that out clearly.
Well, no, but you couldn't get a book deal until now. This is the turning point.
Maybe, right? Maybe Christmas novels have to build on the success of Treat Yourself.
I mean, if you guys would ask me where I'm at with that, I might have some good news. But since you haven't, I don't know where to go forward with that. You know,
so. Baby, let's talk about MacArthur. All right, let's talk about Johnny Mac. I want to talk about scandals, and we could probably do a whole show, Piper, on the sort of strata, the kind of pantheon of different scandals you can have. And I think I think MacArthur just doing MacArthur things doesn't quite qualify. But one of our listeners asked the question, and I think it's good. What do we do with old content of fallen leaders? So these guys who fall from grace, these guys who have like real scandals or just being mean scandals or whatever, and it causes us to lose respect for them. What do we do with all that old content? Thoughts on that, Pipe?
Well, it's a really hard one to answer, I think, because the easiest answer is you just throw the baby out with the bathwater. You ignore everything that person has ever said or done, no matter where they were, you know, spiritually or theologically at the time they said it. So, I mean, there's anybody who's listening to this could probably name five people that this is relevant to in the last 10 years. You know, so Reformed pastors, non-Reformed pastors, just leaders who we've respected who have done something stupid and or sinful and fallen from grace. And I don't know. I don't know the answer because I don't want to say, yeah, just ignore everything they ever did. But at the same time, personally, I don't ever go back and reread their books.
Yeah.
I don't go back and listen to their sermons. Like, I can't listen to a Mark Driscoll sermon from 2003 and not think of the guy who became, you know, a self-destructive leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to separate the two. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's the price that is paid by being an influential leader who loses credibility. Everything you've done loses credibility. Maybe that's the cost.
Yeah, I think it is, man. I think it definitely is at some level. Big R, how do you deal with this?
I don't know. I remember this dude at a conference I was at said the reason why I don't quote guys, you know, that are, you know, anything, you know, sooner than, you know, 100 years ago is because these are guys that have been tested and proven. And I thought about that and I thought, well, okay, yeah, there's some truth to that, right? But what we don't know is we weren't there back in the 1850s. So we don't know the kind of scandals that like Spurgeon and, you know, 500 years ago that, you know, Calvin and Luther were, you know, had happened to them, that if we were there at the time, we would have said, you know, man, I don't think I want to like read this guy or quote this guy. So I think for some of these guys, depending on how long lasting their work is, I mean, it's not really, since we're in the middle of it, yeah, there's going to be a pushback from our side of the table. But I wonder if in 50 years or 100 years, you know, the next generation is going to look back. Those books will have been re-released. There's going to be all these nuggets of gold in them. And those scandals are going to be such ancient history, and they're going to be rewritten so many different times that they're not going to seem as important or as timely when it's time for them to learn from these guys. And certainly with guys like Driscoll and these guys, I mean, they did write things that are valuable that might help, you know, four or five generations from now. So I don't know. In terms of now, yeah, I don't know. We feel there's like a weird taste in our mouth, but that's because we're too close to it, I would say.
Dude, that's an interesting point. Along those lines, like which of our guys now do you think will be around then? You know what I mean? Like a couple generations down the road, who of the current guys that we have now, who are people, who's going to move the needle, you know, several generations down the road?
I think it's the people who write more biblical and theological stuff as opposed to cultural stuff, because cultural stuff has a short shelf life.
Totally agree. Totally.
I mean, or so you take somebody like Tim Keller, who does both. You know, he writes like Center Church, which was profoundly influential, but is already losing influence because of shifts in church planting and things like that. But then you get, you know, his work like, I don't know, Prodigal God or The Reason for God. Those things are going to last to a totally different degree, I think.
I think that's totally true. I mean, obviously Johnny P, Timmy K, and I think some of the guys that are a little a little less well known than them. You know, you get a guy like Sinclair Ferguson or somebody who writes all of this just amazing stuff, but he's just kind of a little bit more below the radar than some of these A-list guys. I mean, who knows where these guys will be at in terms of public consciousness 50 years from now? But certainly, I mean, they're, you know, barring any public scandal, I mean, people are going to be reading the people that we rely on now to be like a voice of, like, you know, reason and reliability. So yeah, the Pipers and including Barnabas and the Kellers and the Martins, the Martin Luthers, as well as the Ronnie Martins, right?
The Martin Luthers, the Ronnie Martins. Yeah,
I mean, that's just, I think, you know, count, we're just on that, right in the
I mean, we're just telling the truth, you know. What about young guys? What about, like, let's go age 50 and under. Which of the young guys are going to last?
But I mean, it's barring anything. You know, it's always, right now, it's almost like we have to qualify it by saying barring scandal. So sure, sure. I mean, it's like who's gonna write some of these, like, these works that are gonna, like, you know, carry us through time and become like a test for time. I don't know. I mean, I think of a KDY, you know, because he has that kind of a knowledge base, kind of built. He has that kind of brain and heart. Yeah. You know, so I can see a guy like that. You know, when is he going to write his, you know, when is he going to write his reason for God? When is he going to write his desire in God? Like, I don't know. Maybe it'll never happen. But
see, that's there's something to be said, though. Like, there are not any profoundly good writers amongst the sub 50 pastor crowd that I'm aware of.
That's a really great point.
You know, like, in terms of, like, the platform speakers. They are they're gifted in one particular thing, but, like, their books are just kind of okay.
Yep.
And well, I see, that is a very snobby thing for me to say, but this is just as somebody who loves to read a well-written book. Kevin DeYoung,
we're in the book business. We can say this.
Yeah, I mean, and as if I've ever held back my opinions on this show.
Right.
I, you know, Kevin DeYoung, David Platt, Matt Chandler, any of these sort of the next generation of reformed influencers, they're all just average writers. And I think,
they are.
I don't think they would argue with that. I know Chandler wouldn't. He didn't even think he is a writer. That's why he always writes with someone else who's a better wordsmith than he is.
And by writing, you mean he's not writing, they're writing.
Right. He crafted a sermon that with that guy. Person, Jared Wilson.
Really?
Or he was on a number of books. I think
Jared C. is his with guy. Man, it would be raining money on that guy. You know? I mean,
here's the thing, though. It's like, what I think the problem is, and I have opinions about this, is that nobody is brave enough to break the mold. So I think what you get with, you know, with the guys like, you know, with guys like Kevin DeYoung, I mean, they're, you know, I would say that they're good writers. They're solid writers. But again, what you're seeing when you read their writing is more of who they're influenced by rather than them being brave enough and maybe even having a publisher that's going to sort of receive what they're doing in an attempt to break the mold and come up with something that is both theologically and culturally relevant to the times, but is sort of like something where it just takes you to another plane. And I just don't think you're seeing that. There's a lack of, like, courage and bravery right now within Christian publishing, because everything is kind of just it's kind of a continuation of a theme.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of more what you get than anything. And again, so then there's this chicken aspect of it, right? Where it's like, well, I would like to write that, but I don't think these publishers are going to be interested in that because it doesn't fall into, you know, the paradigm of what's being written. And I think one of those guys needs to do that.
And it has to be one of those guys, because if any of us went to a publisher and we were like, we have a fresh idea on how to communicate something, we would get shot down in negative 4 seconds. You know, just we don't move the needle sales-wise and influence-wise. Now, if Kevin DeYoung came and said, you know, I want to do a sort of Eugene Peterson meets Brennan Manning reflective, but from a reform perspective, kind of take on something theological, publishers would eat that up. Now, I don't know if he has the capacity to do that. I haven't seen any of that in his writing. He's a really well-organized, clear communicator, but it's much more like a clear lecture than it is a sort of soul-moving kind of writing.
But Piper, I would say, you know what's interesting about that? Like, probably my favorite book in the last 10 years is this book by Zach Eswine called The Imperfect Pastor, who I think it just did what you described. And he, you know, it reads like a novel. It's beautifully written.
It's probably sold like 11,000 copies, which is really good for an author of his level, but doesn't, I mean, that's 10% of a Matt Chandler book.
But it might also be something that down the road becomes something that influences two generations from now. It just didn't do well in the time because, you know, again, it's there. They gave it a shot. It won a book. It won, you know, some Book of the Year award. But again, that could be something that just like Eugene Peterson, you know, it took 20, 30 years for it to become, you know, impactful for, you know, the next generation.
Dude, what's Eswine's deal, man? Is he like,
he's kind of like the super conservative, you know, for our generation, Eugene Peterson is who he is.
Okay.
That's how I describe
him. Dude, has he got any charisma, Big R? Does he have star potential?
He does not have star potential, but his whole thing is about not having star potential. So his whole thing is like, it's like a modern day Peterson where it's like, no, we've been looking at this all wrong. The whole thing is to not be famous. The whole thing is to be reflective.
Oh, it's that deal.
Whole thing. But he writes in a very like beautiful, you can tell he's influenced by really, really amazing novelists and writers. And so he writes, he wrote this book that way. And it's just, and again, it's going to resonate with a lot of people. And for a lot of people, it's not going to resonate because of the way it was written. I mean, that's my opinion about it, but
I agree with the point that you just made, Ron, that there are absolutely wonderful books being written. They're just not by the most influential platformed people.
Absolutely.
The best books being written are by people who are focused more on the craft of writing rather than on the breadth of communication.
Yeah. Well said.
One other thing I wanted to jump back to that Ron said earlier, talking about sort of the how people will be viewed historically, you know, and maybe, you know, we're a little too close to this to figure out how to view a scandal of a Driscoll, you know, and then Ted, you mentioned like there's like gradations of scandal. There's did you have multiple affairs or were you just a jackass to people on your staff? Both of which are wrong, but seem like they probably should be graded differently. History doesn't look kindly on people who have been respected for centuries either. I mean, in the last 10 years, you get the it's not revisionist history. It's more like looking more closely at the people of the time. So like Jonathan Edwards and various Puritans and the racial climate of the day. How do we view that? Mm-hmm. That's because that's a stain on them. Mm-hmm. And so history doesn't always look kindly on people who we have great respect for. Sometimes it overlooks scandals that exist now. But, I mean, it's so hard to say who's going to be, you know, profoundly influential. But we know for a fact that people are going to look back and go, how did they not see X at the time? Whatever that thing is. You know, how did they not fight harder against abortion? How did they not whatever that thing is 100 years from now? People are going to judge really harshly the church leaders of today on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Boys, final question kind of along these lines, and then we'll have to zip through the other topics quickly. But do you think years down the road when, you know, people are wistfully remembering Katie Y's regime and his work lives on, do you think I will get like a footnote in history for having launched Katie Y? Serious, man. Real talk. I'm thinking legacy right now. You know, I'm all about the legacy.
Well, you made it, what, 125th on Jared C's list?
Yeah, man. I think you've already made it. What do you mean? What do you mean the future?
The future is going to say. They're going to go, you know, prominent reformed author, pastor, Kevin DeYoung, wrote with a little known sports writer who lived nearby. And help launch that man's, who's
DeYoung wrote with his neighbor,
the neighbor boy who liked to write about boxing.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that cute?
I think history might not. It doesn't look kindly on the second person in most sort of dual endeavors.
Well, baby, how about this for a more positive take, man? Yeah, this is what I'll say, man. When the whole emergent thing comes cycling back around, which it will, maybe it is right now, because cycles happen a little quicker these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think Moody's going to come after you for an update, man. And then
dude, can we come out of retirement again to kill the emergent
absolutely
church?
Yeah, it'll be called like the Submergent Church or something like that. But your book will have some continued.
The reformed version of the movie The Expendables. We're all like the old heroes get called back into action to go take names and you know kick
I
some,
love it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's good. That's you coming out of retirement to take on Brian McLaren again.
Yeah.
Take on Brian McLaren Jr. Just, baby, if you can just be patient, it's all going to come back. Just be patient.
I will, man. I'm going to be patient. And between now and then, I'm just going to rest on my 125th, placing in the Jared C. Wilson list.
And, baby, don't forget those royalty checks, because those things are flowing in like mud right now, I'm sure.
Well, absolutely, man. I'm reminded, basically every time I check my mail.
If you want a reminder, open the mailbox today, Big T.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how you'll get a reminder.
Ted, if you want a reason to appreciate John MacArthur, people in his camp still really offended by the emergent church. So they are still threatened by it, and therefore your book still moves in their world.
His camp is probably... Yeah, they're probably responsible for the bulk of our book sales right now. So tip of the cap to Johnny Mack's camp, and I hope they stay afraid of the emergent church. So let's keep that product flying off the shelves.
Here's to fear.
And boys, speaking of books and product, this is fascinating. And by fascinating, I mean really not at all fascinating, but it's a thing that people in our circles got delighted by, and that is the fact that. Justin Bieber, Biebs, so current and former pop star. I don't know how current of a pop star he still is, but apparently he was photographed reading Timmy Kaye's book on marriage, The Meaning of Marriage, which tip of the cap to Justin Biebs as well, because that is a great book. I highly recommend it. I'm glad he was reading it. Glad he was reading something good. But in true, kind of weird evangelical fashion, there were... all sorts of news releases on this. And did the Gospel Coalition do a whole piece on it, Piper?
It took like 10 minutes, but yeah.
Gospel Coalition Australia. Yeah, I think they already had it queued up. They probably have a piece written, and they just need to drop in the celebrity's name.
Dude, it's like
newspapers do with obituaries for
presidents. It's
like
an obituary, exactly.
Yeah. This is the obituary for The Meaning of Marriage. Justin Bieber read it. It's dead, story printed.
I want to ask a follow-up question on this. So, also, I didn't know there was a Gospel Coalition in Australia. That's amazing.
I didn't either.
Like, they're really expanding, those guys. My question is, when Timmy Kaye got this news, like when this trickled down to Timmy Kaye in whatever sort of, Tony Manhattan loft he lives in, like, do you think this moved the needle at all for him emotionally? Do you think he was like, hey, babe? He did that motion to bring his wife into the room and like baby, check this out. Like Justin Bieber's reading.
Or did he pull out his BlackBerry and text one of his grandkids to say, "Hey, who's this Justin Bieber fellow?"
Yeah. Why should I care if he's reading my book?
I feel like that has just as much possibility as it making him feel good.
Okay. Follow up question to that. What do you think is the sort of Mendoza line or the cutoff point for pop music that Tim Keller listens to or has ever listened to? You know what I mean?
Oh,
like, where does it end for him?
1978.
Like, I was going to say, like, did he top out at like Moody Blues or Chicago or
the Allman Brothers or something? I don't know.
Yeah, the Allman Brothers.
I mean, that would be the cornier end of it. I think. Okay. I think he would be a pure like, oh, dude, for me, it's all about like James Taylor,
yes. He's absolutely a James Taylor guy.
That's what I
for
mean,
sure.
Yeah.
Dude, it's Glum.
Yeah. James Taylor still, he's folky, but like, man, he still has a massive audience, and he didn't do anything like super silly. So people take him seriously, and he's, there's like one of those guys. Right.
See, I picture him as one of those guys who's like, when he was a sophomore in college living in the dorm back when he had hair and it was moppy, he's listening to like Strauss trying to read philosophy, and the guy next door is listening to, the Rolling Stones, and he's just battling in his soul between judging the guy and hating him and then like praying for him at the same time. That's what I picture Tim Keller as never listened to pop music. It was,
dude,
it was
he may
always
not.
Classical.
I see him as being like a guy now that only listens to like classical music. That's how I do Timmy Kaye.
So you guys think his record collection in college contained like zero pop album? Like there was no Rolling Stones. No, I could see him being kind of and I love Timmy Kaye, man. I don't even know why I'm saying it like this, but kind of like a smug Beatles guy. You know what I mean?
Like, every Beatles person is a smug person. That's what it takes to like that trash.
Yeah, but like Rolling Stones, like some of that stuff was controversial because of the content. But like there was all those dudes like James Taylor and Carole King, and you were allowed to listen to that back then.
The Joni Mitchell era.
Joni Mitchell.
100%. Oh, dude, you know he's rocking some Joni Mitchell.
100%.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah, so he was either classical or like the full on like bell bottom folk crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, baby, you know what though, man? Back to your original point, man. What I thought was like super funny about the whole Biebs thing was like all I could think was all of these other dudes in our camp thinking and dreaming of ways that now that Biebs is like proves that he likes to read like good Christian content, how can I get my book into Biebs' hands? Like, yeah. How can I get him like my latest book? Because this dude has years to hear now, man. So I need to.
Baby,
we might
be able to get you a book deal now if we can get one of our books into Biebs' hands.
Because, dude, all you're looking at is like, I can't even imagine where Meaning of Marriage like bumped up to on the Amazon list after everybody saw it. Because, dude, he was getting. I mean, like major news organizations were pushing on this. So
breaking news, man. Breaking news for sure.
I mean, Meaning of Marriage just came Keller's like biggest selling book of all time for sure. You know,
dude. Now of your library, Big R, and these could be books that you've written or books that you've written with me. What book do you think Biebs would be the most likely to read of yours? And we need to make this happen.
I mean, I think I think if he's feeling edgy, Bridezil, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Because, you know, he's hanging with Carl Lentz and he might be thinking, sure. I don't know, I'm reading this guy Keller. Have I been going to the wrong church? I mean, is it all just, is this all getting silly? Do I need to get a little more serious about my faith? Do I need to go to Redeemer now?
Yes, he's going to the wrong church, but carry on.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No, but I'm just saying, like, so there's a good shot. He could be like, hey, you know, I put all my eggs in the Carl Lentz Hillsong basket, and I'm not seeing dividends from that anymore. So maybe it's time to get a little more serious. So maybe Bridezil would lead him to that kind of hurt that he's been feeling for a long time, baby. That's what I'm saying.
I know it. No, I know it. I love it, man. I love where your head's at right now. I love your enthusiasm for that book. You know, this is like a little marketing segment for Brad.
We haven't promoed that book in a long time, baby.
No, we haven't, baby. And it feels good. It feels good to be back on the horse. You know, it's not too late. That book still has life.
Barnabas, give us a 10-second promo on Bridezil, would you?
10-second promo on Bridezil of Christ. So Bridezil of Christ is a book by Ronald Martin and Ted Kluck, put out by, was it Waterbrook Multnomah? Is that right?
Absolutely no idea.
Okay, we'll call it Waterbrook. Might have been NAV Press. It was one of the two.
It was Waterbrook.
Or Moody.
It was Waterbrook? Okay, I got it right the first time.
Or Baker, academic.
All about how the church hurts its own, coming from two people who are dedicated to the church but have also struggled with it. It's honest, it's reflective, it's pastoral. You should check it out. Bridezil of Christ, go get it.
Even when he's joking, baby.
I know. Dude, literally, he's literally the Michael Jordan of this. He's
we just popped up 249,000 numbers here on Amazon. I'm looking at it. Oh, it just keeps bumping up right now.
That means
now.
You sold two copies.
Right, exactly.
It's like NASDAQ. It's like the stock market, you know. Ron's got a little – because he's vintage and minimalist, he's got like a little ticker tape machine in his office.
Absolutely.
Like it makes that little clicking noise and reams of paper spool out.
Right. It's analog. It's an analog counter.
It's an analog counter. That's right. It clacks these little beads over every time we sell a book. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Oh, baby. Boys, I got to go. I got a meeting. So, yeah. I know it. I know it. The time just flies, you guys, when we're together, doesn't it? I mean,
wow.
I don't know. Not to get too earnest and reflective, but
that might turn into a really good book.
I mean, we got to enjoy this time. You know, we aren't always going to have this, you guys. It's not always going to feel like this when we're hugely famous and successful and you know, fractured and arrogant and just pulled in a lot of different directions. We aren't always going to have these moments. So
if you were an athlete or a famous musician, everybody would immediately begin wondering, like, is Ted planning to retire from this?
Dude, exactly.
You know, he's speaking in these sort of reflective pseudo-morbid tones. What's happening?
Past tense terms about the thing that he's currently doing. But no, I have no plans to leave the Happy Rant. So, this thing is a rocket ship, and it's just about to take off, as we discussed earlier, vis-a-vis some of the business irons that we have in the fire, boys. So you know what? I'm just going to leave that a little ambiguous. We'll peel back the curtain on that next week, And boys, we have done what we always do on this program, which is to wander to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
What do you do when the world around you is falling apart? It's amazing to me how many people are breathing air. They're going about their business and doing the things you're supposed to do. But if you really ask them, they know that on the inside, they are spiritually and emotionally and relationally dead. If we're not careful, all of us can experience that death. When what we need to do, even as the world around us is falling apart, we need to learn how to march when it would be easier to stay where we are and die. Join me each week on the March or Die Show as we discuss that and so much more.